We do have some large patches of flat land in our region, but otherwise the state of Jefferson is a place of rolling hills and jagged cliffs and pointy mountains. We have volcanoes to thank for some of that, and we should probably thank them too for staying largely dormant. We'll practice looking at the region through a geologist's eyes. Our guide is a geologist. Karen Grove got her PhD from Stanford University, is retired from teaching at San Francisco State University, and now teaches Ollie classes to adults in Ashland at Southern Oregon University. So there's your university tour, Karen Grove. Thanks for joining us in studio on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks. Good to be here.
We have talked to other geologists about seeing the landscape, you know, seeing things like where water flows, that sort of thing. When you travel, I just wonder if you miss road signs because you're looking at the hills.
Yeah, absolutely. And the good thing is my husband's also a geologist. So when we travel, you know, we're those nerdy people looking at the rock wall instead of, you know, the rest of the landscape.
So just traveling from your old stomping grounds in the Bay Area to the Rogue Valley, I mean, there are several different kinds of geological formations. I guess this could be a long drive for you potentially.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's true. But we usually just do it pretty quickly. But it's been a long drive in the sense that the geology here is completely different than that in the Bay Area. So coming here, it's been really fun to learn a very different geology than
the basic differences then, like, you know, how the area you lived in the San Francisco area was formed versus how the Rogue Valley was formed.
Yeah, well, in San Francisco, in the Bay Area, and most people are familiar with the San Andreas Fault, and there the two tectonic plates are sliding past each other. So you get earthquakes from these sliding plates past each other. But once you get to north of Mendocino, along the coast of Oregon and Washington, the tectonic plates are coming together, and most people have heard of the Cascadia subduction zone. So we don't have volcanoes, active volcanoes in the Bay Area, but we do have active volcanoes here, for example, is one difference.
And that is part of plate tectonics, the fact that the Pacific plate is diving into the North American plate?
Yeah, when the plates converge and the oceanic, the Pacific plate goes beneath the continental plate, the North American plate, then that melting causes melting, and then that melt, the magma rises up to create volcanoes. Whereas when they're sliding past each other, the plates, there's nothing going down to depth, so nothing to cause melting.
Okay, so that's what it is. So rather than the horizontal sliding, you have this greater pressure from an up and down perspective,
right,
which also makes things like coastlines pop up or subside after earthquakes and things like that, right?
Yeah, and we do coastal California, there is some uplift because there is a teeny bit of convergence going on across that causes to have cliffs, coastal cliffs in California too. But yeah, certainly the subduction zone causes rising and falling along the coast.
All right, so that's also why there are cascades then, is because of subduction.
Yes, mm-hmm. Correct.
We learned through a trivia game, my team got it wrong, that Sutter Buttes actually count as the southernmost of the Cascades. Does that sound right?
No, it's actually Lassen.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, Sutter Buttes is a little bit different, and actually, yeah, that's kind of a longer story, but Lassen is the southern Cascade volcano.
Okay, I'm going to go back and visit that bar and get them in trouble for
exactly
getting the Sutter Buttes thing wrong.
Yeah.
So the Cascades themselves offer a lot of variety in landscapes. I mean, they're not all these perfect symmetrical like Mount McLaughlin stratovolcanoes, are they?
No, they're not. Those are called strata or composite volcanoes. But yeah, sometimes you get shield volcanoes, the like Hawaiian style. So like Medicine Lake volcano is one of those. Newberry is one of those. Although Newberry isn't technically one of the Cascades, there's kind of something else going on there. But yeah, there is a variety. And one of those forms of variety is the fact that when the oceanic plate is going beneath the continental plate, sometimes it's shallower, sometimes it's deeper. So, for example, in our region, we have the Western Cascades, which is Grizzly Peak used to be a volcano. But now, because of differences in the descending plate, the Cascades are farther east. So we have Mount McLaughlin to the east of us, farther east than it was. So the Cascades were where Grizzly Peak is now, like 30 million years ago. And now now the volcanoes are farther east than they were then.
So the front line of volcanic activity has moved further east.
Yeah.
So why then, since you brought it up, I mean, why would the Newberry volcano, which is Paulina Lake, East Lake, why is that not considered part of the Cascades when they're basically within sight of each other?
Yeah, because, well, you know, our state is still suffering. I think suffering is maybe, you know, an anthropomorphic word, but the Yellowstone hotspot, Oregon was over it not, you know, 15 million years ago, not that long ago, and it created a lot of basalts, but it's still having some effect. And so there's a lot of stuff going on down there still that people are still trying to figure out, actually. So, and the other thing that's happening is the Basin and Range Province starts at the eastern edge of the Cascades. Also at the eastern edge of the Sierra Nevada. And once you go east from that, the continent is literally being stretched apart, being pooled apart. So that gives some volcanism happening as well. So you've got some other things going on besides the descending oceanic plate.
So does that pulling apart in basin and range country lead to land dropping?
Yes.
So that explains why water doesn't get out of the basin and range.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. You get all those closed basins in eastern Oregon and in most of Nevada.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that, where like the Truckee River rises and goes, you know, out of Lake Tahoe and into Pyramid Lake and bye-bye.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
Wow, a lot of stuff here. Karen Grove is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We're trying to cram about 15 million years into 18 minutes here, but you can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Karen Grove taught geology at San Francisco State and teaches OLLI classes at Southern Oregon University, with another one coming up August 3rd, which she reports, because it is electronic, is not limited by number. You can join us now on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So give us a geological starter set. When viewing a landscape, what are some of the first things to look for?
Well, of course, you're always, the things that really tend to strike us is the hills. So anytime we see, you know, some sort of topography, your eye goes to that. In fact, I have a blog. I should advertise it. It's landscapes-revealed.net. And I try to provide a pocket geology for people who aren't necessarily geologists. But I just did one on San Francisco. And so why are there so many hills in San Francisco? Because that's what strikes you, mm-hmm. when you go there. And just like in our valley here in San Francisco, the hills are a result of differential erosion. So some rock types are much more resistant and to the forces of rain and wind and all of that. And despite that, they stand there and keep being high, whereas other rock types are not very resistant and they're very weak, and so they form the lower parts of the landscape. So sometimes those hills are very obvious, like you go drive past Mount Shasta. Well, that's a volcano, and it's building up, and so, you know, that strikes your eyes, and you can say, yeah, it's a volcano, it's building up. But other times, like Mount Ashland, it's because granite is a very resistant rock type, and so that's why it's high.
Well, the Siskiyous, in fact, are an eroded plateau, aren't they?
Yeah,
basically
they are.
One height at one time?
Yeah.
Like the Catskills in New York?
Yeah.
Okay, so
yeah.
The peak heights are very similar.
Yeah.
As long as we're talking about Mount Shasta, what accounts for the differences? You got Shasta, you got Shastina, you got Black Butte a few miles away, all with somewhat different looks. Black Butte in particular,
yeah,
looking very different from the other two.
Yeah, you know, it's all about the plumbing, because you've got that liquid rock down there and it's trying to get up, but sometimes it comes up more directly. Sometimes it mixes more with the continental crust that it's coming up through. So, you know, it's not just a single pipe coming up to the surface, but a lot of diverse pipes. And so it just depends on what it's mixing with.
And a lot of different consistency, therefore,
yeah,
in what comes out and also in how it's ejected. I mean, if it just kind of flows out like the elementary school volcanoes,
yeah,
with baking soda, it's going to form a more smooth peak versus like a cinder cone like Black Butte.
Yeah.
Which actually got ejected into the air, cooled, and then came down, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a lot of that has to do with composition, because the magmas that have a lot of silica tend to also have a lot of gas and be explosive.
Mm-hmm. So we figure out that if you look at the landscape, you look at the hills first, then you look at the spots between them, you can figure out there's usually water courses in there of some kind.
Sure. Like Bear Valley, mm-hmm. Bear Creek.
Mm-hmm. So at one point was there, I mean, Bear Creek Valley would have been higher then, it sounds like, before it started getting worn away and sending its sediment off to the Rogue River.
Well, the trick here is that everything is tilted to the northeast.
Uh-huh.
And that's pretty cool, because you can literally walk through 300 million. Mm-hmm. Am I going to say that right? 300 million years of geologic history from the Klamaths mm-hmm. over to our modern Cascades. And it's because they're tilted, what's underneath Bear Creek Valley is mudstone, which is very resistant. So everything would have been tilted, but then it's the millions of years of erosion that has caused the mudstone to really erode away. And so, of course, Bear Creek decided to go there, mm-hmm. whereas the granite to the west is really resistant, makes that high ridge, and the volcanics at Grizzly Peak are resistant, so they make a high ridge.
So is the tilting a function of a volcanic activity or something else?
It's a function of that convergence of the plates, mm-hmm. and I have yet to see a real good explanation of why, but after the Grizzly Peak volcanoes erupted, there was a hiatus in volcanism, and that tilting occurred because of the convergence between the plates.
For the folks who don't know, Ashland Grizzly Peak overlooks the town. The high school teams are called the Ashland Grizzlies, et cetera. So it's quite a notable thing. How long since Grizzly Peak was a volcano?
Oh, 10 to 15 million years.
So short in geologic time.
Yeah, short in geologic time.
It is funny to have the conversations with geologists. They say, well, recently, and then they chuckle and go, well, 50 million years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, right.
Because you're talking, what, 8 billion years? You've got a lot of time to deal with here.
Yeah.
Grab your headphones. It looks like okay. We have a phone call for you. Let's go to Grumpy John in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with geologist Karen Grove.
Hi, I wanted to mention a delightful experience that we have available to us. As you're driving along out I-5, you can look over and you can see Black Butte and you can see Mount Shasta. But if you get off at Mount Shasta City, there is a good road from the middle of town going, I don't know how far up, I think probably about a third of the way up Mount Shasta. And it's a very different experience standing there, looking up at this huge mountain that is no longer there. It's an entirely different feel than looking at it as you're driving by, and I recommend people take the time to just drive up and stand on that mountain. It really is awesome.
All right. Thanks for that, Grumpy John. Appreciate that. So if people want to take drives like that, particularly to get up high to look at geologic landscapes, what kinds of things, in addition to the hills and the water courses, should they be looking at and taking in?
In terms of locations to go to,
what can you learn from a scan of the landscape like that?
Yeah, well, a lot of times the land is so covered with vegetation that it's hard to see the actual underlying rocks. But I would say, you know, take some time and try to see what's under there and start observing really how many different rock types there are. Like you go to Immigrant Lake, for example. And you may not know that it's actually pretty easy to see some mudstone, even though it's super recessive. There are some places where you can see it. The hills around Immigrant Lake, you can see sandstone and conglomerate from old river channels. So just taking the time to say and be curious, like, why might there be some of these cobbles in these sediments? Well, you need high energy, so that must be an old stream channel. If you're, oh, that's mud. Well, it must have been a quiet environment. I'm a sedimentologist, so my specialty is to look at sedimentary rocks and figure out, was it a lake? Was it a river? Was it an ocean? So the mudstone that underlies the valley was deposited in an ocean. So 100 million years ago, our valley was under the ocean.
Wow, wet and salty. And I've also heard this story about table rocks from tours up there that they are actually the floor of an old river channel.
Yeah, so it's inverted. What's called inverted topography, because in fact that's when the High Cascades were becoming active 7 million years ago, and lava just flowed right down what's now the Rogue River Valley. And then because the relative resistances, the lava is much harder than the underlying soft sediments. So where the lava is still preserved, it makes the flat tops of the table rocks. But where as soon as the water can get under that, it'll erode away the sediments very quickly.
So are the table rocks tougher than what's around them?
Okay. Yeah, the tops. And so there's something to look at when people go to the table rocks to see the lava at the top, which is the resistant rock that is making that higher in the landscape.
Well, let's talk about another, as long as we're talking about a Rogue Valley set of peaks, let's talk about Roxy Ann in East Medford, Prescott Park. And and I think some people walk around thinking that too is a volcano.
It's not. It probably fed volcanoes in the past, so it is igneous rock. It's hardened magma. But it probably never actually made it to the surface. So there are hills in our valley, for example, near Immigrant Lake, that are there simply because there was some of this magma that intruded into the sediments and therefore made parts that are more resistant. And Roxy Ann is an example of that.
So which is Pompadour Bluff? Is that among the things you're talking about out by Immigrant Lake?
Pompadour Bluff is a different one. That one is in a sedimentary formation called the Payne Cliffs. It's named for the Payne Cliffs farther north. But it's a prominent feature in the landscape because it's sand and conglomerate that were deposited in river channels, whereas adjacent to it, it was mudstone deposited in floodplains. So the mudstone erodes away, leaving the sand and gravel that was deposited in the channel. So both of those are going on in the valley to make those hills within the valley.
So the conglomerates sound like you can get a lot of different kinds of rock mixed together.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, some of those rocks probably come from far inland.
So the Payne Cliffs, I mean, given the wear patterns there, I mean, is this the kind of thing that is not there for long in geologic time before they wear away completely?
Yeah, well, that's what's happening now is because we aren't building up so much right now as tearing down. So, yeah, the forces of erosion, wind and rain and all of that, freezing and thawing, is trying its best to wear away the topography.
So we certainly believe that there'll be a Cascadia subduction zone earthquake again sometime in the next few hundred years. In geologic time, I guess that's the blink of an eye. But what about volcanic activity? Is that ruled out for the region? Is everything more or less dormant except for the occasional event at Mount St. Helens, for example?
Yeah, I mean, Shasta could pop, but we don't. The nice thing about volcanoes is not always, but usually they give us some warning and start having little earthquakes or, that indicate moving magma. So we'll likely get some warning. And McLaughlin seems to be very quiet.
All right. Let's hope they stay that way. They're nice to look at. We don't want them to get too active here. Karen Grove is a geologist retired from teaching at San Francisco State University, teaches OLLI classes at Southern Oregon University, including See Like a Geologist, The Landscapes Around Us, offered on August 3rd at 4 p.m. online. Check in with OLLI in Ashland. I think we have a link there. If we don't, we'll get one. Karen Grove, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks so much. Always fun to talk about geology.